Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Joseph G. What happened to... Oh, the applause. This should have came on automatically. Well, I guess it forgot to go. This is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-step recovery.
Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, here we go.
There it is.
You know, I've never met an applause I didn't like. I was at my This is Joseph G. with the good news of 12-step recovery, Rum Radio and rumradio.org. I was at my church one Saturday night, and they had invited anyone in the congregation to come up and speak. And I immediately jumped up out of my seat and ran to the microphone, and I told them, I never met a microphone that I didn't like on a Saturday night. The number one fear, the number one fear is speaking in public. Did you know that, Harold?
Yes. The way I heard it, it is feared even more than death by dismemberment.
Death of a child, loss of a home, loss of a job, loss of a wife. All those other things, at first blush, seem really serious and profound. But just talking in public doesn't seem like much until you realize that ridicule is death to the ego. And the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. The preacher said, vanity's a vanity, all is vanity. You know what my number one fear is, don't you?
Nobody's I can't remember.
Nobody's going to ask me to talk.
Well, I take care of that.
Rum Radio is moving along. We're in 140 foreign countries, including Mississippi, 2,339 towns, cities, and villages, and approaching 147,000 hits to the website. It's a good work for a good cause. There's no money being made, and we're anonymous to the 11th tradition. I would like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to their listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals, and they afford us some print space from time to time. I'd gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the nation. Harold?
Hello, everybody. It's nice to be here, and this is my way of giving back. Also, as Joseph just mentioned, I owe my life to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, the rooms where they meet, and the fact that ever since 1935, people have been meeting. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. They get together and do wonderful work. Most of all, it's all about improving their conscious contact with God. And so along the way, we team up with other people in recovery, people that I call sponsors. And so I had a wonderful sponsor named Paul Z in the beginning, and he was a great sponsor, a great inspiration. And we had quite a friendship, and he was one of the people that encouraged me, saying that contempt prior to investigation is naughty. So I began to grow spiritually and found a higher power that I could live with. My first higher power, a power greater than myself, I knew alcohol was, and I also recognized that the group was a power greater than me. Two heads are better than one. So I adopted the group as my first higher power, and then little by little began to understand about people in various churches and their spiritual studies and spiritual growth, and began to understand more about the big book, the Bible, the Holy Bible. So it's been a wonderful process, and the key to everything is working with other alcoholics. That's what Joseph's website is devoted to, rumradio.org, and then this radio program grows out of that. We're here to help people understand Chapter 7, working with others, and what that really means, how to find a sponsor, how to find sponsees. And so, because we only get to keep what we give away. In fact, I've printed that on my stationery and on my business cards. As far as business, I am a family therapist. I work with families and help them solve their problems and really develop more problem-solving skills and brainstorming, and help them learn how to negotiate things and learn some diplomacy, and how to really take care of children. I teach parents that they really have two assignments: keep the kids safe and healthy, and to show the kids how to succeed in the real world, how to give and receive love. So that's how I spend a lot of my time. I have a few sponsees. Things aren't going very smoothly, but that's how we grow. I call it being uncomfortable in order to grow. So we're pretty uncomfortable at this point, but that's all right. It's all about growing and learning. Using all that happens as energy to help us humble ourselves. And so, anyway, that's enough out of me for now. Let's move forward with tonight's topic. Joseph?
Thanks, Harold. I'd like to start with, on page 63 of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is our basic text in AA, and really is the template of all 12-step recovery. Basically, the only difference in any of the other 12-step recoveries is step one.
Yes.
Other than that, it's all comes from the 12 steps. I tell my church that. A lot of churches, like, I heard there was 118 variations, I don't know if some who came up with the number, of the 12 steps in churches alone. And what I tell my church is, if the 12 steps are not a gift from God, why have you adopted it? And if they are a gift from God, why do you feel compelled to change them? I never really get a credible answer on that, and I think it's just people are just so unique. We're just very unique people, and there's only one particular way we can do this. What we found is, rarely have we seen a person fail who thoroughly follows our path. There's some that will not or cannot give themselves to this simple program. There are such unfortunates. They seem to have been born that way. And there's two, people with grave emotional and mental disorders. They can get well if they have the capacity to be honest. It's not really all that. That's a pretty simple statement, but I found in 15 and a half years that to be a true statement, which is all that counts. So the third step prayer is found on page 63 of that basic text. I give this to my new sponsees. This is one of their first assignments when I take them on as a sponsee. I have them call for the next 30 days someone on their lifeline list. I have them get a list of men either in a newcomer's packet or have them circulate go to the meeting a little early and have that circulate in what they consider their home group, a list of men's names who are willing to take phone calls. And then call a different man as best you can for the next 30 days, or say it in person, recite the third step prayer. And this gives them the opportunity to pick up the 500-pound telephone and ask for help, because we're all very self-sufficient, and we don't need any help, although our lives have been broken and shattered, but we don't need any help. So this is the first form of humility, is asking for help, asking permission to say this prayer. It connects them up with their home group, the home group fellowship. They get to know his name, and you get to know their name. It encapsulates what we're trying to accomplish in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's also a surrender. And fourthly, one of the people that you were calling, one of the guys, might have been thinking about picking up his first drink of alcohol. And when you call and ask to say the prayer, the chances are he will not. So he's already into service. Here's the prayer. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thy wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. That's terrific. I was going to read it with you, but we have that 1 second delay, which would be super confusing.
Oh yeah, that's a good thought. Well, tonight we're on. Let me give you the guest call in. This is live tonight. Sunday nights are live. Saturday is rewind, and Monday night is rewind of this show. But tonight, this is the opportunity. If you have anything to share, anything to say, whether you agree with our understanding or not, I believe if you get 15 alcoholics in a room, you're going to get 20 opinions. So if you have an opinion that you'd like to express, of course, you can only speak from your own experience, which every time is different. You can't cookie cutter this thing. We're all very unique, and we are very different. If we're not unique, we're special. There's no doubt about that. The guest call in is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. Tonight is step 11. This is from the section on the website. Michael M. wrote it. It's taking someone through in 24 hours using just the big book. This is basically the way it was done early on, even before they had a big book. These are the understandings of getting the fella through in a timely and thorough manner. Now, they sacrificed thorough for timely because it was very a desperate situation. Most of the people they were dealing with were in hospitals or skid row. So the understanding is now that most people aren't that desperate. So we have the need to lollygag. You like that word, Harold? Lollygag.
I do like the lollygag.
We have a caller. Let's see who we got.
I bet that's Jim.
Hello? Is that you, Jim?
Yeah.
Jim's phone signal is breaking up. Ask Jim if he could call. He could hang up and call right back and try that again. Wow. Okay, do that, Jim. No, can't hear you worth a darn. Call us back.
Yeah, he hung up. Yeah, let's see if you try. Jim comes on from time to time. Step 11. Okay, so we have the the understanding now to lollygag. They didn't lollygag back then. They took this very seriously, and they moved on. That's what Rum Radio is about. It's getting back to more of a basics understanding. Also, the Big Book also tells us we go find a prospect. Go find a prospect. I believe that's the exact words in the Big Book. Go find a prospect. It doesn't say have the prospect find you. Do you find that interesting, Harold?
Yes, that's very, very important. And I'm not sure how or why the meetings in our area have gotten away from these basics, but I am so glad that we're focusing on back to basics and getting back to intensive work with another alcoholic is the key. That's so vital, so important. I think in this
Jim's
Houston area.
Him.
Oh, there we go. Say something,
hello?
Jim.
There you go.
That's better. Perfect.
Can you hear me better?
Yeah, a lot better. But, thanks.
Okay. I've been trying to listen to y'all on my laptop tonight, but for some reason my internet signal keeps going in and out. But in spite of that, I can still identify with what you guys are talking about. Hello. If a sponsor really wants to find the sponsee, he should have no problem with it, because you can go to any AA or CA meeting anywhere in the whole state of Texas, and I guarantee you, you'll find one. Whatever meeting you go to, because they're right there. Some would be sponsees are kind of scared to, because they've never done it before. But all they have to do is just go to a meeting and listen to what's shared in there. You know, that's where the sponsees will be. Is that right?
Yeah, I agree with you. The problem is coming into the rooms. You're in a strange environment. You're a stranger in a strange land. You don't know the jargon. You don't know the culture. You don't know any. All you know is you're in a lot of pain, and this might be a way out of it. You don't know what else to do or where else to go. So for you to go and say, a lot of times they'll say, who's available for a sponsor? Nobody explains what a sponsor is. Just like we start off the meeting with a desire chip, half the time, and I've gotten in trouble for this, asking, what's a desire chip? Like somehow they've heard it so many times, they don't realize when the new man walks in, he's shy, he's bashful, he doesn't know what to do.
Exactly.
That's where the sponsor goes gets you. You go get him.
Yeah.
And that happened tonight. We had a new man, and he was asking about someone who would be willing to be his sponsor. And one of the people in the meeting went up to him afterward and said, I'll do it. And so it worked out great. And so every once in a while we see things happen. But this website is devoted to helping make it easier and smoother for both the sponsors and the sponsees with information. Information is power. We want to empower everyone.
You know, I understand. We should understand how it feels, you know, when you first come into the program, about being shy and not wanting to talk very much. I felt the same way too. But then again, after I went there two or three times, I found out that I fit in just like everybody else did, you know. And I heard people saying things like nobody ever came to this meeting because their behavior was good, and it made me feel a lot more comfortable, you know. And because of that, I started opening up just a little bit at a time, and you know, I kept going to the meetings and kept going. And what can I say? 14 years later, I'm still here.
Thanks, Jim. You got to try to remember, though, this is your particular experience. It doesn't necessarily work. Now, all we know is the ones that were successful. We don't know the failures.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of failure, and we never get to see the failure. But our numbers have gone down in the last 29 years.
Okay.
So there is a problem. So people go say, well, this is how it worked for me. Well, yes, it worked for you. Well, eventually you wanted it so bad, you made it happen. But some people come in and they don't have that experience. They didn't have the stick-to-itiveness that you did.
It's either that or they just got too much pride to speak up and ask for help, you know?
It's hard to ask for help.
Yeah.
It's hard to ask for help.
But it's not impossible, you know?
No.
We all came in the same way.
You got to remember, though, this is a sale. This is what we call the prospects. A prospect is a sales term. So we qualify the prospect. And one key of selling something to someone, we're selling them a better way to stay sober. We're selling them an idea of spirituality and a design for living. And one thing that's critical in a sale is you always make it easy for the prospect to buy your product.
Make him feel like he's welcome. Exactly. You
make it easier to buy.
Yeah, make him feel like somebody really does care about him, you know? One thing I've never heard out of all the years I've been in AA is people that had just come into the program started talking about how good it was out there in the real world, you know?
Yeah.
I don't think you'll ever hear of that, and I'm not looking to either. But see, we all came in the same way, you know, everyone.
For the most part, that's our common experience. That's what experience is, an inventory of our past mistakes. That's how we relate to each other. We're going to do step 11 tonight, and this is from the, we have a fellow who wrote this up, taking someone through the steps in 24 hours. Just using the big book.
Okay.
You don't have to do 24 hours. You can do it in 48, 72, 2 weeks, 3 months.
However long.
If you want to do it in 24 hours, say the guy's in prison and you're going to be with him for so many hours, and this is the only chance you got for him to work the steps. You know what? Here it is.
Here it is. I can't promise that I'll be able.
What we can do, Jim, what we can do is we can read along, and you two on the listening on the radio, go to rumradio.org, and in the middle there's a drop-down column that says 12 and 24 Dr. Bob times 5,000, and under that column there's step 11, suffused by a presence, one with the universe, spirituality chapter and verse. And we can read along with Joseph. Joseph is going to read this, and we can read along, and then let me get mine back, and I'll read along as you read, Joseph.
The simplicity of the 12 steps, step 11, the spiritual principle is spirituality. The 11th step is
I'm going to have to let you go, so I'll keep on listening.
Great. Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, Jim.
All right. Yes, sir. Y'all have a good night.
Thank you.
Me too. Bye-bye.
The 11th step as written explains that we are on a search, though they do not simply ask us to randomly search. They tell us that the searching will be most effectively accomplished using two very specific tools, that of prayer and meditation. They then tell us exactly what it is we are using these tools to search for. Improving our conscious contact with our higher power, they even narrow down this search for us. They tell us that the simpler the prayer, the purer the prayer. This is certainly not to suggest that praying for something specifically is wrong, as I'm quite sure there is no such thing as bad prayer. Mark Twain said, you cannot pray a lie. With that said, history and the experience of millions and millions of people show us that spiritual progress tends to flow less freely when our prayers take the shape of something like, God, please grant me your will along with the wherewithal to carry it out. And since we're on the subject, here are a few suggestions on how best to take care of me. I had a fellow in primary purpose, Randy, and he is in the legal field, and he came up to me, and he said, Joseph, he says, me and another fellow, we pray for each other's selfish ends. Would you like to join our group? We'll pray for your selfish ends, and you can pray for ours. This made no sense until I realized that they were both attorneys, and then it made perfect sense.
That's great.
We have to pray. Sometimes a simple prayer is, to some folks come in, they're at war with God. They have no God. They haven't really figured it out. Step three asks us to make an agreement of what that God or no God looks like. So if I get an atheist or an agnostic as a sponsee, I usually don't. Most of them are Christians. But if I do, and they don't know who to pray to, I usually suggest to whom it may concern. It's good enough to get you started. You know, there's certain prayers in the scriptures. It says the Our Father. We say that in a lot of meetings. They say the Our Father is the closing prayer. And in the closing prayer, it says, give us our daily bread, which, you know, give us our daily Mercedes, give us our daily mansion, give us our daily good job, give us our daily blonde. Oh, yeah, nobody go after the blonde. Whatever it is, we're going to want that daily bread. And I think Jesus said it the best. Man does not live by bread alone, but every word that's spoken from the mouth of God. The bread that they're referring to in the Our Father is not Jewish rye. They're talking about spiritual enlightenment through the Word of God. That's the bread. That's the bread of life that we're looking for. So I'll tell my sponsees, even if the prayer is as small as help in the morning and thank you in the evening, thank you is probably the most powerful prayer you're going to say, and then you can elaborate down the road. But it's a good way to get started. Put your shoes under the bed so you're already down on your knees. And in the morning, to get your shoes, you have to get back down on your knees. It's an attitude of humility to something greater than ourselves and puts us in a position to make contact with our Father who art in heaven. Harold?
I like that very much. And I just was writing a comment on the Blog Talk Radio, and that's what I wrote, is that I say in the morning two words, help me God, and in the evening two words, thank you. And that is a powerful prayer. That's the way I pray. And step 11, very important. It reminds me that what we're all about in the rooms of AA and all the 12-step programs is improving our conscious contact with God. And when you think of the millions of people getting together every day to improve their conscious contact with God, it is really amazing. I like the idea of getting on my knees. I do that. And for some reason, it does help. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. God, please, ultimately we want to adhere to the idea that as addicts, we have a fair amount of empirical evidence supporting the platform that our visions of what is good for us and our ideas regarding what we want are often quite erroneous in the search for happiness, joy, and freedom. Consequently, the book affords us some very specific suggestions on how to maintain and grow our relationship with our higher power on a day-to-day these breakdowns on how we are to commune with God. In the evening, in the morning, throughout the day, will serve as our second, third, and fourth directive for remaining spiritually fit. Basically, they're asking us to pray continuously. Now, if I'm praying on my knees continuously, how am I going to get anything done? So I looked in the scriptures and I looked and say, because it says the same thing there. It says to pray continuously. How do you do that? Well, the answer is in the same book, the other big book. It says in the Psalms, which are the songs of David, to keep in your heart, religious songs. And in thanksgiving, an attitude of gratitude is a prayer unto God that works right through the program. As long as you're grateful at any given time, you're in a prayerful spiritual mode. It's when you turn your thoughts to harm, fear, anger, you lose it. As long as you're grateful, everything else will be okay. When I have a sponsee that's having a really hard time, I suggest they write a gratitude list. Start with the simplest things in life. The air you breathe, the food you eat, your health, the roof over your head, the car you drive, your wife, your children, whatever it is, the dog that loves to play with you. And the more things you write about gratitude, the more it will grow. And by the time, if you've made a really good gratitude list, you feel like 100% that no matter what's going on in your life, it's okay because you're in gratitude. Harold?
Yes, I agree. It's the most important thing. And as we really get a true feel for how much love there is in this universe, it's just amazing. As a marriage counselor, one of the assignments that I give a couple who's coming in for help with their marriage, they're mad at each other, they're thinking about divorce. I have them write down a long list of the things they're grateful for about their partner, and it's fun to watch their faces as they grimace and so forth, but it's very rewarding to see what they come up with the following week and all the things they're grateful about, getting their thoughts off of themselves and onto another person. It's very important. I also ask people that are severely depressed to make a list of the things they're grateful for, and a list of people that they could help, especially help anonymously. And it's amazing how that'll lift people out of depression when they get their thoughts off of themselves and on to someone else. Even if it's something as simple as going to the pound and bathing the animals there, getting them ready for adoption, that'll pull someone out of a deep depression every time. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. That's a great idea. In terms of our spiritual work in the evening, we're told on page 86 of the big book, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Where are we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves which should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time? Or were we thinking of what we could do for others, of what we could pack into the stream of life? 10 questions to be posed every night previous to turning ourselves over to the dream world. 3 of the 10 questions are, in fact, yes or no answers. And in a recovered life, one should assume that the other 7 would not be reaping a ton of data. It's a very simple task and not one that have ever found to take more than 10 to 15 minutes at most. The spiritual review can be done internally or in written form. In my experience, especially in the early goings, doing a nightly written 11-step can be quite powerful and informative, specifically because it can give the newcomer an opportunity to review their pages on a weekly basis and get a firm grasp on which liabilities are showing up most prominently and therefore demand the most attention. Furthermore, often is the case where we manifest some old behavior early in the day and manage to completely lose sight of the shortcomings by nightfall, as we have probably come to see that any misdeed which we fail to become accountable for is destined to repeat itself. This quiet opportunity to review the day is critical to the soundness of our spiritual foundation. I put it to you this way in step 11, prayer is the quarterback. We send it out. Meditation is the feedback. We get it back. And self-examination is the goal line. As the unexamined life is not worth living, life in recovery is to die for. 10 and 11 really goes back down into self-examination. We write a we're doing the 10th step. We're writing out where we were wrong. If we were wrong, one of our character defects usually have come back into play. So now we're going to another level. 10 and 11 are together. They're attached at the hip. So now this is getting deeper into meditation, listening, and self-examination. Where was I wrong one more time? Which are the character defects that I'm still hanging on? And I have my own, you know, Harold could attest to that. Still have a tendency not to back down in an argument or be very outspoken. I'm an entrepreneur by nature. I'm a promoter. I'm a promoter in a rooms of promoters. But I've been a promoter in my professional life. I'm a salesman. I've been in combat, so I'm very combative. And these are the character flaws that I have to work on sometimes a daily, sometimes a hourly basis, still after 15 and a half years of sobriety. Alcohol is a symptom of my disease. And sometimes we can only do we're only going to get a percentage of those character defects done. Hopefully by the end of our lives, maybe we'll get the greater percentage than not. The key to all of 12 steps is a constant forward motion. Taking one step, even if it's a baby step, we get a little further down the road. And sometimes we take a step back, and then it's three baby steps forward and a giant step back, and this goes on. Depending on who you are, have you stopped fighting everything and everyone? Are you living life like a loose garment? Does things come up? Are you living in happiness, which is a reaction to the immediate environment, or you're in joy, where you're living in acceptance, knowing that everybody is exactly where they're supposed to be at any given time? Harold?
That's a wonderful thought. We had a terrific experience together today at church, and the topic was focusing on our rights versus our duties. So many people in our culture today are really hung up on their rights, and they're demanding their rights, and they're really focused on their rights, and they don't give quite as much attention to their duties. And we have a duty, if we're parents, we have a duty to keep our kids safe and healthy and show them how to be successful. If we have a spouse, we have duties. We have our if we have a driver's license, we have a duty to obey the laws and help each other share the road. That's our duty. And it's so easy for people to get focused on their rights, demanding their rights, and I seldom see anything of benefit come from that. I see a lot of benefit coming when people will take a stand, step forward, and really do their duty. It's about effort. It's about giving up the good to have the better. And yes, it's good to have rights, but it's much, much better when we do our duty. So that was, it was refreshing, and I was looking forward to sharing some of those ideas on the radio tonight. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Bill W. said, sometimes the good is an enemy to the best.
Yes.
Were we restless laurelitis? We're doing okay. I think it's a natural tendency for me, sometimes just to do enough to get by. It's close enough for government work. Some people come in and that's the god of their understanding, higher power, which is the initials are HP. And of course, in the Lord's Prayer, it tells us, Our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. So his name is, his initials are HP, and his first name is Howard.
Howard Power.
Howard Power. Howard, Howard Powered. Sometimes we settle for the good instead of striving for the best. But the problem is striving.
What I see is that once a person has clarity on which type of striving will really carry them forward, sometimes we're afraid to strive because we don't want to be striving and actually be moving backward. But that's what I love about having the steps and working together with a team, because together we can know which things are pitfalls and which will actually lead us forward. Another way of saying it is that we can seek and find the blocks to our spiritual growth and then ask God to remove those. But there has to be a willingness to see the block as blocks before God can remove those. That's the mystery behind step six that for years I didn't understand. Why is step six needed? We became entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character. Why wouldn't we automatically be entirely ready? And the key is that we're, number one, we're not seeing the blocks, and number two, we're still using those character defects. We're not at all ready to have them removed. We're using them. Thank you very much. So this is a wonderful program to get the subtle points down. Yes, of course, everyone understands we shouldn't murder, and we, no adultery allowed, although we've got a step named for that, the 13th step. But these subtler things, how we will really turn our back on the truth at times, it's what I've what I'm understanding at this point, and I'm really grateful to AA for this, is that this gives us a chance to see exactly how the enemy works. This is a spiritual warfare, and we're not fighting flesh and blood. This is the enemy at work. Addiction is the enemy at work. Alcohol poisoning is killing so many young people and destroying so many families. We're getting to see the enemy at work, see how he works. Once we understand his ways, I think it gives us a deeper faith and a better understanding of how wonderful our God is. Joseph?
Thank you. You know, Harold, there's many ways to go forward. but there's only one way to stand still. But upon awakening...
Yeah, I compare standing still to... I compare recovery to being on an escalator, and if we do... I compare recovery to going... trying to go up the down escalator. And if we stand still, we're not really standing still, we're moving backward.
Thank you. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day before we begin. We ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed at a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. Put simply, we are told that we must begin each day with a prayer and meditation. Notice it doesn't say prayer or meditation. These two tools complement and inform each other in a way which leaves either of them alone insufficient for our purpose. Prayer is the process of asking for God's will. Meditation is the process of listening for the answer. This is often referred to as a two-way prayer. Seen in this way, if we pray but fail to meditate, the will of God will be readily available to us, but our capacity to feel it will be severely impeded. I consider it this way. Prayer is speaking to God, like on a telephone. You call up God. It's a local call, by the way. You call up God and say, "Hi, God, you're just a really a great God, and I love you, and you know, and I there's so many things that I need to do today, but I'm going to try to keep you on my mind, and thanks again for everything you do to me. You know, I'd like to stand here and talk, or kneel here and talk with you, but I'm burning daylight, and I have a million things to do. I'm sure you understand. Thank you so much for being who you are, and I got to go. Goodbye." And then you leave and you go, "You know, he never really talks to me." Meditation, yeah. The other end of the conversation. I tell my sponsees new in recovery, we complicate the word meditation to the nth degree. I have somebody in my church, and I was home teaching them one time, and I mentioned meditation. They don't use the word meditation very often. They use the word ponder, which I think is a form of meditation, but not specifically. There's all kinds of different meditation. And she turned around to her husband. She says, "Meditation, isn't that a different religion? Is that an Eastern religion?" Meditation means medicine for the mind. It's slow down the natural process. Sometimes we call it the committee, the chatter, the monkey mind, to slow it down so we can get on a higher spiritual plane. So now we can hear the still small voice, the intuitive insight. It comes when you slow the brain down and tell the committee to take a hike, at least for a little while. So I suggest to my sponsees, if they're down on their knees and they're praying for 30 seconds, stay in the feeling for a minute. If they pray for a minute, stay on your knees in the feeling for 2 minutes. You don't have to think. You don't have to not think. You don't have to do anything. Stay in the feeling. And that's a great way to get started. Harold?
That's wonderful. I've been studying the epistles and Paul's letters to the churches in the big book. And in there, of course, he talks about pray without ceasing. And he says it's like breathing. It's like breathing. Mm. And so that's a thought that I offer. And I like your idea of praying and then stay with the feeling. And as we get up, just it's having a godly view and approach to every situation all day. That's what pray without ceasing means to me, is thinking, well, and you've often heard me say that I measure each day by what it does to my faith. Did and each experience. Did this expand my faith or diminish my faith? And so I'm thinking about God as I go through each situation and what God thinks about that and what, how this affects my faith and how I can be of more use to God, more useful to God. And so as I go through the day, there's more and more where I'm focused on God and what this means to God and how much God means to me. And it becomes a spiritual day and a spiritual program. And that's how I approach this now. It wasn't always that way. When I was newer in the program, it had to do with learning the prayers and doing as I was told. My first higher power was the group, and so I would check in with the group. My instruction was make no decision alone. And my mom taught my brothers and myself to be totally self-reliant. You don't need anyone. You can do this yourself. You are the greatest. It was kind of the Muhammad Ali type prayer. You are the greatest. You can do anything you put your mind to. And be self-reliant. Believe in yourself. I was reading some old letters, and it said just that. Believe in yourself, and you can do anything you put your mind to. Well, that is such a shallow and self-centered and egotistical approach to life. It's amazing. I wasn't dead years ago. Now what I try to do is say, I want to be more useful to God. What does God think about this? How can I please God with this decision? And I check in with my fellow group members, my brothers in recovery. And the step 11 says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God, praying only for knowledge of God's will for us and power to carry that out. And for years I thought the word us was the word me, praying only for knowledge of God's will for me and the power to carry that out. But it says knowledge of God's will for us. So I can pray for knowledge of God's will for Joseph and for the people on the board that have been giving us such a hard time, and for my family, and for my grandkids, 9 grandkids, I can pray for knowledge of God's will for us, this whole family. That's so exciting to me. That's so much different than anything I thought about 20 years ago. I have the gift of 24 and a half years in the program and in sobriety and in recovery. And so I'm always learning something new. I was 17 years in before I discovered the word us in step 11. And I just love this program. I love God, and it gets more exciting with every day that passes. And this is all a gift. Every day of those, 4,000 or 8,000 days or something, every day of that is a gift from God. None of it is an accomplishment. It's all a gift. Joseph.
Thank you, Harold. As to the question of pardon me?
We've got 7 minutes.
Well, what we could do is we could shut down, you know, let them know in Nashville that we do a close down, but we can continue on and finish the program.
Sure.
As to the question of how to meditate, which many an AA member claim to struggle with, the idea to begin with is the understanding that there's no such thing as good or bad meditation. The exact level to which you judge your meditation is the exact level to which you will struggle. I like that. What occurs during a meditation is far less critical than the act of taking the time to meditate. And the process of meditation is far less complicated than most people suspect. In terms of implementing a morning ritual, which is simple enough to not overwhelm, but complete enough to fulfill the directive, I tend to offer newcomers the following suggestions. First, ask yourself if you can commit 5 minutes to more in a morning to your relationship with God. I can do that. If so, take the following action. Upon awakening, this means before you brew the coffee, walk the dog, read the paper, wax the cat, we're attempting to invite the spirit into our lives previous to leaping into our inherently imperfect humanity. First thing, start by reading the third big book, the third step prayer on page 63, the seventh step prayer on page 76, and the 11th, 12 and 12 traditions, page 99, St. Francis prayer, step prayers. This should take no more than 2 minutes for all those prayers. Wow, that's a lot of praying in 2 minutes. You would think it would take a little longer. You'll notice that the above passage also speaks to efficiency, which I believe to be a key word for us. We know that every human being has given amount of energy in a given day. I imagine all of us have had the experience of coming home after a long day and with many tasks still to accomplish. Sat on the couch, watched TV for a few minutes, and the next thing you know, it's morning and you're lying there in your clothes. This is the act of your body proclaiming, for today we are done. I don't care if you still have the stuff to do. The engine has run dry. Consequently, the efficient distribution of that given amount of energy is important in serving the world in the manner we are charged. In this passage, we find the true spirit of the serenity prayer. I'm asking God to help me locate energy in that direction. I'm also asking God to show me the situations where I do have the power to be of service so that I may attempt to put all my energies in that direction. Finally, the most important part of the prayer is asking God for the power to be able to tell the difference between the two, because left on my own devices, I will use all my energy up fretting about the things I can't change and have no energy left for the things I can change, and I once again find my life unmanageable. We now find ourselves in possession of four of the five ways in which we stay spiritually fit and guarantee that we remain recovered and living in the sunlight of the Spirit. But we have one more spiritual directive left to uncover, and it is by far the most important one to all. The last words in the chapter into action read, the next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. So how does that, Harold? We got 2 minutes left that we can, the sunlight of the Spirit. We come into the rooms of AA, and if you notice, I've noticed people come in, and I'm sure I was the same way, at war with God. Their eyes are dark. If you ever look at, the Spirit is in the light of the eyes. If the eye has no Spirit, the whole body is dark. And I've seen people walk in with dark eyes. There is no spirit left in them. They're spiritually bankrupt. And coming and mentioning spirituality, to some is not only it's uncomfortable, it's painful. It's like when a shadow recoils from the light. That's why Bill W. said this is spiritual kindergarten. You have to take them where you find them, but you don't have to leave them where you found them. It's a slow process initially in the beginning, just getting rid of the demons of alcohol. You know, and they're demons. You know, you have a demon rum, spirits of alcohol. Now, these are malevolent spirits, and they've been around since man first crushed grapes. This isn't a new phenomenon. On the 23rd proverb, starting on verse 27, it speaks to the condition of alcoholism 3,000 years ago. So I would tell you this, if you're looking for some tools laid at your feet, Rum Radio is the resource. And like always, see you on the radio, rumradio.org. Good night.
Good night. Well, let's see, we have 30 seconds left.
Oh, yeah, my clock's 10. Are we still in the same clock?
Look at the internet time. It's 20 seconds now.
So, oh, I got